Lights, camera, action, the USL made its debut on national television in stunning style. Welcome to All Talk, all USL talk, USL covering all the latest scores, news, and developments in the second highest division of the United States men's professional soccer system, the USL Championship. I'm your host, Vince Galvano. Oh boy, so much to get into. We have made it. We are on the big time. The curtain opened up. The Oscars, the Emmys, the award show, whatever you want to call it, USL had its coming out party. The match day spotlight this week will be none other than Louisville City taking on Indy 11 that featured on CBS national television for the first time in USL Championship history. Can't wait to get into that. We'll talk about the goal of the week for match day 4. My prediction didn't pan out the way I expected, but we'll see. Rundown of the other fixtures as usual. Also, news from the USL Rondo, the official newsletter of the USL, talking things in Buffalo, what's going on there with the USL Championship, as well as a roster rule in effect which allows some of the young players in the league to shine. But speaking of shining, wow. USL shined on the big stage. It was something spectacular. So glad, and I hope that everyone was able to catch it. If not, DVR it, record it, check out the highlights. You missed a real, real treat of a game. I really enjoyed watching this one. Whew, so much to get into. I mean, just to talk a little bit about this game being selected and what makes it so special, Nicholas Murray, who just always does great content for the USLChampionship.com, talks about Louisville City and Indy 11, and he just says, you know, since these two teams first met in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup back in 2014, the rivalry between the two clubs is the stuff of legend. And it's nicknamed the LIPAFC, the LIPA FC, and it rises above the rest of some of the featured rivalries that are part of the USL. So what is this rivalry? Well, the Louisville-Indianapolis Proximity Association Football Contest, to give it its full name, was the brainchild of two of the main supporters groups of each club, Louisville Loose Coopers and Indy's Brickyard Battalion. It was first played, believe it or not, when the teams were in different leagues. So Indy kicked off in 2014 in the NASL, while Lou City joined the USL Championship in 2015, but quickly took hold thanks to our friend the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Lou City drew first blood with a 2-0 win in extra time back in 2015, and then Indy hit it back a year later with a 2-1 victory. So when Indy joined the USL Championship in 2018, however, this rivalry known as LIPAFC, the LIPA FC, became a fixture on the calendar. The sides now have played 21 times across regular season playoffs and Open Cup, with Lou City holding 10 wins, Indy 5, with 6 draws. Lou City currently holds the LIPAFC trophy after sweeping last year's series, wrestling control back from Indy, which had won it back in both 2021 and 2022. And I mean, the most recent edition, I mean, think about this, the most recent edition of this game at Louisville City FC's spectacular Lynn Family Stadium also drew the highest attendance in the series history, a packed house of 13,248 fans were on hand for the last game as Lou City took a 2-0 victory behind goals from Elijah Winder and Cameron Lancaster. So a lot of history already in this, you know, we can say young league. But to draw almost 15,000 fans, it's a no-brainer to feature this as the debut. You want that sort of atmosphere. And with that, we got a spectacular atmosphere. And I was just waiting to see, especially what the production value was going to be on a game of this magnitude. And we got some surprises, one of which was the inaugural theme of the USL Championship for CBS, and it introduced its broadcast theme music called United Pulse, Heartbeat of the USL. It was debuted, obviously, during the league's first match airing on network television, which was this past Saturday. And this theme is a collaborative creation by Emmy-nominated producer Joseph Sigarella and songwriter Nathan Paget, aiming to encapsulate the vibrancy and intensity of USL matches and the passion of its supporters. So this effort to blend music with sport reflects the USL's ambition to enhance the match viewing experience, providing fans with a more immersive and engaging broadcast. That from www.newscaststudio.com. And it was a really nice anthem. I really enjoyed it when it first came up. And we were accompanied with scarves on the USL intros, like scarves wrapped in balls of all the select ball of all the USL teams. And it just had some nice graphics. There was a black silhouette of a soccer player controlling the ball, volleying the ball, and so forth. And then we had the select ball like bouncing off of a shield and like bursting into a bunch of pieces. And it sounded like, for all WWE wrestling fans out there, it sounded like Kurt Angle's theme song. And if you know it, it's just a great American theme. It feels so ingrained into what it is. I really enjoyed it. And of course, we had Mike Watts and Devin Kerr in the stands with Loose City fans, bringing us into the USL on national television for the first time. So congratulations to them too for being the first voices that we got to hear on national television for the USL. And then we had a couple just feature spotlights on some of the players. Obviously for Indy 11, it was Jack Blake being focused on, and he was being interviewed in the locker room by Heather Mitz, who was the analyst for CBS for this game. And I mean, one of the things from the interview, he was just very proud, Jack Blake, who's an Englishman, by the way, just to represent the city in his colors and be part of something really big here. And it was so cool to see both teams just walk through the stands, sunny, 63 degrees. It's a soccer-specific stadiums. I mean, behind the ultras on the left side of the broadcast, we see a giant scoreboard, there's standing support. There's a mini field being played on right behind too. It's just a really beautiful complex that's just all about the game, all about soccer. Who else was featured for Louisville City, by the way, and also Indy 11 prior to the season on USLChampionship.com? It was actually two players for Indy 11, Cam Lindley and Sebastian Guenzati. For Cam Lindley, he was averaging already on the season 2.5 chances created per 90 minutes, which is in the 90th percentile compared to other players in the midfield across the league. He's a championship all-league selection back in 2022, so a lot of momentum for him coming into the season, already having some important stats for a midfielder right off the bat. USL Championship talked about Cam Lindley as one of the featured players because during his first stint at Indy 11 in the abbreviated 2020 season, you know, it didn't quite click for Cam Lindley. You know, in 12 appearances, he failed to record a goal or assist as the boys in blue dramatically dropped off of playoff contention in the later stages of the season. But for the Indiana native, the second time around has so far proven as beautiful as Frank Sinatra once told us it could be. So acquired via transfer from Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC after earning its first championship all-league selection in 2022, Lindley simply built on that success and helped lead Indy back to the postseason for the first time in 2019. His playmaking ability in the center of the field and offset pieces saw him record 8 assists and 60 chances created while logging a career high with 2,900 minutes. So that earned him a second consecutive all-league honor. His influence will be a key factor in the club's overall success as it goes along. And the other person for a forward player to watch was the Uruguayan Sebastian Guenzati. He's only got 1 goal in 342 minutes played so far prior to coming into this game against Louisville, the last one coming against Detroit. USL Championship had this to say about him. When the Tampa Bay Rowdies allowed Sebastian Guenzati to depart during the past offseason and to a side that looked like a serious challenger in Indy 11, there were plenty of questions. When Guenzati scored only 3 goals in 19 regular season games to start his stint with the boys in blue, those questions quickly shifted to Guenzati, who at times seemed out of sorts and lacking good fortune for his new club. The 32-year-old rebounded in the latter part of the season, however, finishing the season with 11 goals, albeit at a strike rate of a goal every 267.6 minutes, a far cry from his prior 2 campaigns in Tampa Bay, and also 3 assists adding on to that. But with the arrival of Augustine Williams for the Charleston Battery, Guenzati shouldn't have to shoulder all the expectations in front of goal this season. and that could put him in a place where he can find a scoring touch to deliver Indy the success it dearly desires. He's also, in terms of accolades, NSL champions with the New York Cosmos in 2016, 15, and 13. Well, so far, only one goal in 342 minutes for the Uruguayan forward for Indy 11 prior to going to this one. For Louisville, it was a couple players being featured. The one, the only, Wilson Harris, that forward player to watch. Four goals in three games prior to going to this one. He was a 2020 USL Championship Young Player of the Year and even had 10 appearances for Sporting Kansas City in the MLS under his belt. USL Championship talked about Wilson Harris, saying that Louisville had its most challenging season in front of goal in the club's rich history a season ago. For the first time, it failed to have a player reach double digits in goals, as Wilson Harris and Cameron Lancaster each ended the season with 9, part of an attack that scored only 41 times in the regular season. Previously, the 2020 USL Championship Young Player of the Year, Harris has always seemed to respond well to a down year. 2021, when competing for both for Sporting Kansas City and SKC2 in the championship, he notched only 2 goals and 10 appearances on a 5.3 expected goal mark. The year after arriving in Louisville, he set a career high with 15 tallies and 3 assists. The 24-year-old is set to become the youngest player to reach 50 regular season goals in league history. He enters the campaign with 46 and with a career strike rate of a goal every 159.9 minutes. It's not out of the question that Harris can compete for his first Golden Boot. Well, he's leading the charge, as we know, and he's already reached that 50 regular season goals in league history. I mean, that's tremendous stuff from him. Damian Lost, the goalkeeper, who's a young player to watch so far this season. Damian Lost, FYI, participated, and I should say played for a little bit at Fulham FC, during which he competed for the United States U17 men's national team at the 2019 FIFA U17 Men's World Cup. His pathway has taken some turns since then, though, including his return to the United States as well as Austin. But the pedigree he has is not in question. If he delivers again this season, there could be a star in the making. He played, he was a top goalkeeper in MLS Next Pro a season ago. He competed for Austin FC. Lost recorded 12 shutouts, twice as many as his nearest rival, and posted a save percentage of 81.6%. So 21 years old right now, and quite a bit to live up to for Loss, but already some good potential there. The last player, just real quick, was Taylor Davila, midfielder player to watch there. It speaks to the individual season Taylor Davila had, as Rio Grande Valley FC missed out in the postseason. Then he was still voted to the USL Championship's All-League First Team. 23-year-old was the biggest reason the Toros had a chance at the postseason at all, with 6 goals and 5 assists, many of which coming at key moments. Now he's bringing that quality to Luz City FC, where he's part of a major influx of talent aimed at restoring the side to contending for top spot in the Eastern Conference again. And what stood out last season was his decision-making. His 41 completed dribbles came at a 63.1% success rate, and with the lineup he'll be part of in Louisville, that threat can only rise. Couple of the players being shouted out there. But it was Jack Blake being shouted out. Prior to going into this one, we're now going to delve into what had transpired between the two sides on national television. A 3-4-3 for Luz City coming out, a 4-2-3-1 for Indy 11. The coach for Luz City, one of the youngest in the league, by the way, Danny Cruz, 34 years old. He was chopping on his gum in this one, by the way. I'm sure all the nerves were going. It was a very nerve-wracking, high pressure, high intensity start, as you would expect for the spotlight that comes on being national television, all the hoopla that goes around it. For Indy 11 is Sean McCauley, who was on the bench coaching them, and he was part of the MLS Cup champion with Portland as an assistant coach, in case you didn't know. That was also being highlighted big time by Watts on commentary. So for the first half, let's dive into it. Sunny, 63 degrees, that fan audio was pumping. They had a beautiful aerial shot before the kickoff, as well as during the corner kicks. Every time there was a corner kick, these drones came up over the field, and it was just showing what was a spectacular soccer-specific stadium in the Lynn Family Stadium. But what you can sense right off the bat lot of nervous energy to start the game off. You're playing on national television, right? It was interesting to find out that Ordóñez, who was the reigning defender of the year, signing from Pittsburgh for Lou City, wearing that number 5 shirt, sitting in the back three along with Adams and Tosh. That was pretty cool to see him in action, as well as some of the other defenders for Lou City. The third minute, Serrano goes up to the left side, doesn't get the foul, ball gets switched to Martinez for an Indy 11 on the counter. I was thinking, okay, maybe this just might be a game where Indy can capitalize on the counter, but didn't pan out that way. In the fourth minute, we had Stanley for Indiana, causing a nuisance with his long throw-ins for Indy. It's always interesting when you have someone who can do some long throw-ins, and Stanley is certainly one of them. So I was like, okay, maybe we can get some sort of set-piece goal from the throw-ins. In any case, back and forth. In the fifth minute, we had a crunching challenge on Morris by Budati. On that left side, it was a battle between these two for a good chunk of this game. And may I say, CBS Sports or CBS Television, they had some great camera angles. The control room, kudos to them. They were on fire. Slow motion, different angles. It was just like, you just got every piece of the action that you needed. In the seventh minute, we had a little dangerous cross for Morris in the box as Lou City started to gain momentum, but it was just a nice strong 50-50 in the box. Indy taking the time to recoup straightly afterwards as Lou City started to take a hold on the game. And then we had a nice, right before the 10th minute, a really nice build-up from the back, and Indy were scattered, and Morris played another great low ball in, so he was really pushing up a little bit on the left side for Lou City as these wingbacks get forward in that 3-4-3. In the 11th minute, we had the first shot of the match from Serrano, got deflected, and he was ready for the volley, but it just kind of sailed over. And in the 12th minute, we had the second shot of the game. And this was when really Lou City was starting to pour numbers forward. And they were getting wide, and they were wreaking some havoc. And they were just generating momentum. And when you really start pouring numbers forward, good things can happen. And in the 14th minute, Indy 11 has a good chance, but you see Williams kind of getting caught offside. Last did a nice diving header, came out of his goal, just getting his little spotlight, even though it was offside. But I kid you not, man. As a forward, when things are going wrong for your team, your role, it's doubly important. When I played center back, when we were under pressure, it was like, if we can get this ball up to our forwards, can they just get us out of it? Win a foul, do something. Last thing you want for them to do is get caught offside after playing a long ball. It just feels like nothing's going your way, you know? Can't get out. And the 15th minute, we got our first goal on national television, right? Lou City was generating momentum into this, and we have 5 goals in 4 games from Harris. It was a ripper from Wilson, and then it was Morris with the assist. Wilson Harris picks up his 5th goal in 4 games. Morris picked up a poor pass from the back. He gets on the inside, and then he just finds Wilson on the outside. He takes a touch with his left and then shoots it straight across goal. No chance for the German keeper Otel on that one. Morris, the left back or left wing back for Lou City, really exploiting the space well. Great support runs in his 3-4-3 and finding the passes on the inside. Delivering some solid crosses was, you know, for me, no surprise that he was able to notch an assist for himself and play that nice ball for Wilson Harris to get his 5th goal of the season. Lou City, man, they can spread the ball so well, and they are creative with their passes, switching the ball field. So 20 minutes, debut game of USL on CBS, and it's all Lou City. In the defensive side of things, Lou City were just dropping to a 5-2-3 in defense. In the 22nd minute, number 16 for Lou City, Perez, settles the ball nicely on the chest, does a 360 around the defender, protecting the ball so nicely with his left foot. Jack Blake was getting fouled twice. I noticed in the midst of the 20th minute mark, around there, 23rd, I guess that was part of the game plan for Lou City, try to minimize his influence on the game for Indiana as much as possible. It seemed as if when he was trying to get into those dangerous areas, especially in the middle of the park, they were just trying to see if they can slow him down by getting him some fouls. 24th minute, though, we get our first shot of the game for Indiana amidst some technical difficulties. I was a little bit worried, you know, debut on CBS, national television. Will everything go swimmingly? Well, for technical reasons, unfortunately, just this instance, luckily we should say, Heather Mitz couldn't get the audio going with Sean McCauley. The visuals were all there. Everything was queued up, but there was no sound. And then you can just like see her telling the coach of Indiana, yeah, it's just not working. I was hoping for no hiccups, but unfortunately we got one there. Luckily, the only one of the game for the technical difficulty. When she then appeared later, the audio was working fine. But at least the control room, like I said, they were on spot with their visuals. I think the Indiana just needed to be a bit quicker on the ball in terms of their layoffs of possession and so forth. Especially Guenzadi, I just felt like he was coming back, running a lot, trying to get a touch on the ball. Nervous energy, less can be more. And when I say less is more, also try to be quicker with it. 27th minute, number 4, Tosh makes a tackle, launches a nice counterattack, which makes its way out to Harris on the right side. And then he finds Davila, who lines it up from 25 meters and smacks the post with his left foot. Wilson Harris, he's left, he is right. His offensive awareness to open up or find the ball when needed, super, super impressive as a forward. I really like that. The curving runs on the outside and then getting the ball quickly and then doing something with it, trying to generate something. Great offensive awareness. 31st minute, though, Heather Mitz, she gets back with the side-by-side of the telecast and talks to Sean McCauley, rectifying the little technical difficulty they had prior. The coach for Indiana was saying that the final pass hadn't been good enough for them in the first half an hour. They need more possession in the final third, and they need to start prioritizing winning of 50-50 balls in the midfield. Lou City were the more aggressive out of the two sides. That was just fact, and that was how it was going in the first 30 minutes. And home city, home field advantage, most likely having a big effect there. In the 32nd minute, we get Blake with a shot on goal that forces a save from Loss, and then gets the rebound to continue the pressure. They find the final pass. Number 23, Budani, gets the touch on the ball first, and it's Morris who cuts off with his shield, trying to just, you know, protect the ball, doesn't get the ball, gets the man instead, and we got a spot kick from 12 yards out. All of a sudden, Indiana have a chance to get back into this game, and it's Jack Blake, the Englishman, who steps up, sends the keeper the wrong way to a sea of boos, but the top corner of the far side, we saw those Indy 11 ultras celebrating his fourth goal of the season. By the way, he also had 7 goals in preseason, Mike Watts letting us know all the stats there. On his call, Indiana right back into this one, surprisingly, I would say. 37th minute, Winder winds up the shot from the outside of the box, but safely in the chest and arms of the Indy goalkeeper. O'Brien blocking 2 shots from Harris. He's always quick to get the strike off, Wilson Harris, which is what you love to see from a forward. 39th minute, Lou City seeming a little impatient, and Budati then takes the sting out of the game with getting the first yellow card of the game. And in the 41st minute, Morris, what a ball up the line. He hooks it on the ground and just somehow finds Harris. It was like a 40-yard pinger around the back line. And Harris drives a nice low cross, and it's Wilson. Harris connects with his first name. Wilson shows great technique, and that's what the 3-4-3 allows you to do. Get those runners from the outside. If the ball makes its way to them, it can be dangerous. Wilson, great finish. Harris plays the ball across, just comes across it really nicely, gets the center of the ball, flies into the back of the net. 2-1 for Lou City. Just like that, not even 10 minutes after Blake equalized, Lou City take the lead. A lot of focus, by the way, in the stands, some notable attendees. Jack Harlow, the Louisville, or I should say Kentucky native, loving watching his team play. By the way, if you don't know Jack Harlow, he's number 58 on Spotify in the world. His song Industry Baby has almost 2 billion plays. You love to see when the celebrities are out, even for the USL Championship fixtures. If you don't know that song, I don't want to sing it. Actually, I'm not going to do it any justice. But yeah, look it up on Spotify the next time you're shuffling some songs around. In the 45th minute, Lass settling the ball with his thigh and playing it nicely. Some of the best I've seen so far from a goalkeeper with his feet was the goalkeeper for Lose City. And in the first half, we had, you know, 5 shots off target, 4 shots on target for Lose City, with a total of 2 block shots as well. So a total of 11 shots there for Lose City. Shots on target for Indiana, only 2. Shots off target for them, 1. So that's total shots of 3. So 11-3 shots in the first half. When you talk about some of the passes and so forth, pretty even, Steven, for both sides in terms of that. And yeah, nothing really to get off. They just want to showcase a little bit of the shots there. Don't forget that Lou City also hit the woodwork once in the first half. Second half, no changes for either side. In the 45th minute, to kick things off, we get a false start. I love Mike Watt's call, by the way. It was just some good natural American comedy, especially with relevance to American football. He just goes 45th for a false start on the offense, but no 5-yard penalty. That was a clever phrase. Striking start for another shot, gaining possession, and Serrano goes inside with Harris making the overlap on the left, but gets the shot off, but wide left it goes. More shade peeking over, by the way, on the near side as the second half was rolling around. O'Brien did a foul on Harris, but it protected himself nicely. Not sure if there was a foul needed, but O'Brien was running on his behind, so I think he was given some instruction to stay tighter to Harris to start things off in the second half. Indiana looked, you know, collectively better and in some better shape as well, pushing Lou City in some tight spaces. Tosh in the 48th doing the throw-in wrong twice, by the way, by taking too much space. I'm shocked he didn't get a booking. I mean, he gets like a warning from the official, but he was taking some space. I mean, twice he had to be told to not do that. So the fact he didn't get into booking was beyond me. And in the 49th minute, we get our third goal for Lose City. Elijah Winder gets something on it to the goal. Perez turns 34 on the outside, plays a lovely cross off Winder, and then Serrano, even with the defender on the byline, heads it across to Winder, who simply heads it for the tap-in. Perez, by the way, turning number 34. That's Schneider, who was the midfielder for Indiana. By the way, I mean, I saw it already in that first half. Perez just able to protect the ball and kind of turn 360 so quickly with it. That's how he did it leading up to this third goal for Lose City. In the 57th minute, the next chance of the game, it goes to Perez as well. He gets it on his left foot. He takes it from the right and then goes inside for the left shot, a little Iron Robin style, and it shaves the post. Perez has some great quick feet, and I just like his persistence to keep going at it, to try things in the offensive third, to be confident enough to take guys on, and I'll actually have the wherewithal to protect the ball so quickly on the turn two. And the 58th minute, just when I thought Indiana was losing their rhythm, it's their savior, Jack Blake, who gets his second of the game. Goalkeeper, German goalkeeper Oltel, finds Blake on the counter from the half. He brings it down, takes the space. He finds Guenzati on the right side. Guenzati plays it back for Blake to hit it first time and score. I don't even know if Guenzati knew that Blake was making the run since his head was down, but he just kind of knew where to pass the ball. Jack Blake, great job taking your space there, finding the outlier of that pass, the outlay, I should say, or the outlet, getting it back and smacking it home for his second of the game. McFadden came on for Morris in one of the first subs towards the hour mark, who I thought had a good game with the assist despite giving up the penalty kick, and maybe his poor track back on Blake's second goal that came out of nowhere, but with the 3-4-3, those wingbacks, they have ground to cover, so need more subs. Subs for Indy on the hour mark as well. Gibson is on for Schneider. He's got 87 games played for Louisville, now playing for Indiana. Tega Ikoba is on for Williams. Hey, Williams, he struggled as a lone striker for this one. Just couldn't get anything going for him. He was offside twice in the first half, and it's just, you know, left alone up there, pressing, chasing the ball here and there. It's tough as a forward when you have these games where you just can't get on the ball and you can't find your own rhythm. So he left the field on the hour mark as well. Tega Ikoba coming on for him. In the 61st minute, Wilson Harris. He's back, baby. He finds it, uses his speed to get the space, drives past O'Brien, who was playing him tight, mind you, to start the second half. Kept him on side this time, and he just drives past Odell, hits it into the open net. It's 6 goals in 4 games for Harris. He opens up so nicely to see the field. What she loved is, and he's just fast. So fast. 66th minute, we get an onslaught of corners for Indiana. Lass couldn't bring it down, had to punch it and then slap it over the net. He punches it up and just kind of comes back and he has to slap it. Surprised he wasn't confident enough to catch it. And then we have Danny Cruz getting his interview, the coach for Lou City. And he just wants, he's looking to get on the transition, trying to close out the game, get another goal. That was a little bit what he had to say to Heather Mitz, who was the analyst on field. 69th minute, Indy knocking the ball around, and they pull a nice switch to Martinez, but he's found offside. If you can see the line, I don't know if he was just turning because he was opening up, but if you're pretty much in position of a linesman, there's no reason to be offside. The offsides were killing, in crucial moments, were killing Indiana's ability to generate momentum in the game. And it's just little things like that. It just can't happen, especially when you see the line. Now, the next time, this is in the 69th minute, by the way. The next time they had possession in the final half, the final, you know, the final third, the opposition's third, was towards the 75th minute. So you're talking 6 minutes later, clock shaving minutes off the next time you're going to get in a dangerous area to do something. 70th minute, Harris, throw your hats down. He scores his hat trick. It's an offside goal. It counts. No VAR in USL, as we know. Odell is losing it. He's about to throw the ball at the referee since Gibson, he felt, was getting his shirt tucked by Harris, but seemed like it was both of them going at it. In any case, this was a goal that Pippo Inzaghi, the former Milan player who was usually caught offside for large parts of his career when there was no VAR right. If you recall, there's a great performance of Filippo Inzaghi. If you don't know this striker for Italy, where Jose Mourinho was coaching Real Madrid, and prior to going to play a game at the San Siro in his pre-match conference, said, "There's only one man I'm afraid of, and it's 38-year-old Filippo Inzaghi." And in that game, Inzaghi would score 2 goals, one of which was offside, but it was so tight that it counted. He's cerebral, Harris, man. He touches it nicely into space on his left. He curls it no problem. Never scored 5 against their proximate rival, Lou City, and they did it today. On the 75th minute, 32nd, here we go. The gloves are off, and Lass is yelling at Martinez for getting in the face of Serrano. His arm was fully extended off Serrano, and Stanley had his studs up trying to get a piece of Serrano, or like use his studs as protection when, you know, that push came. No VAR in the league, so you get these instances. For me, it's like one of those fouls that would be giving anywhere else in the pitch, but not in the box. That was interesting as tensions were boiling. And in the 81st minute, Indy gets another. They have this never-say-die attitude. I really thought this game was out of reach. 22 Gibson gets help from a deflection from the headed clearance. And yeah, it's Indy kind of trying to come back into this game. In the 84th minute, Wilson tries to get a PK, but to no avail. It's approaching now the 90th minute. Jack Blake comes close on a free kick. In the 92nd minute, we have Shawunmi missing the frame and not picking out the runners on the back stick. That was a bit unfortunate, Lou City could even added a 6th to the game there. Really wide open. I was shocked at how wide open it was in the final stages of the game. But in any case, it would end there a really, really thrilling, thrilling open for USL in the championship. A 5-3 thriller. 8 goals in this one. And Wilson Harris shined bright like a diamond. His hat trick to give Lou City highest goals scored against Indy. He puts himself on top of the score chart 4 USL Championship. Louisville on such great form and has that swagger that just shine at home. Didn't reach that close to 15,000 mark. Instead, we had 11,330 people in attendance, according to FOTMOB. Hostile environment to play in, great support, and that 12th man in Kentucky is palpable. Good aggression and perseverance showed in their 3-4-3. Some good service as well with Perez, Morris, and Harris. I mean, those three really outperformed. For Indiana, Jack Blake, as we know, focal point of Indy's attack. Unfortunately, today they were a little bit slow in possession, weren't aggressive enough, that didn't win those duels, those 50-50 balls that Sean McCauley was talking about in his interview. But they still managed to stay in the game, arguably finding ways to come back. Conceding before the half really, really hurt them. But in any case, what a way to debut on national television for this one. You want goals, man on man, this game was that 8-goal thriller. And it was kind of the will they, won't they, if Indy was kind of just going to generate a comeback. Not many other opportunities to watch USL Championship on CBS. Next time around will be August 3rd, in case you missed this one. That will be Colorado Springs Switchbacks taking on Phoenix Rising at Widener Field. And then the second match, or I should say the third, 3 out of 3 matches we'll get on CBS. The final match for CBS will come late in November. It'll be the USL Championship Final. And everything, details there to be determined. A little bit of a longer match day spotlight, but rightfully so. A monumental achievement for USL Championship, a big milestone for the league. Welcome to national television. Let's get that higher exposure, and mostly more exposure as well for this audio that we're all listening to and that I'm producing. Side note. All right, here we go. Get on to the other fixtures. You want to talk about goals? How about a 6-goal thriller? FC Tulsa tying Phoenix Rising 3-3. This one took place at One Oak Field. That is the correct pronunciation, by the way. I had to look it up. It's because a company that acquired the name rights pronounces its own name that way. That energy company is indeed named One Oak. That's O-N-E-O-K. One Oak, it's pronounced, and it's actually been headquartered in downtown Tulsa for over 7 decades and employs about 1,300 area residents. So I was just curious to know what the pronunciation was for the stadium. And it was cool to have a little backstory. I like that it's ingrained into the culture of Oklahoma. Although FC Tulsa walked off One Oak Field with a 3-3 draw against Phoenix Rising FC, they did not disappoint the crowd for their home opener of the 2024 season. Just 52 seconds into the game, forward Stefan Stojanovic made One Oak Field roar with noise with a beautiful goal right past the Phoenix Rising goalkeeper. Phoenix Rising's midfielder Emil Quello was shown a red card just a few minutes after that, leaving them down a player for the final 30 minutes. Even with the draw result, the 5,135 fans that came to One Oak Field for the home opener brought the energy from the kickoff to the final whistle. It was Remy Cabral who had a double along with a Formella penalty for Phoenix. One of Cabral's doubles, by the way, came from the spot as well. And it's Lazo and Zawahi with the other goals for Tulsa, in addition to Stojanovic. So, 6-goal thriller, even a red card there for Phoenix Rising. Hartford Athletic would put 3 on the board. Miami wasn't able to match the 3, though. They were only able to get 2. Hartford Athletic 3, Miami FC 2. This one taking place in Connecticut at the Trinity Health Stadium. Much more people than the first game, the home opener for Hartford Athletic that I watched this time around. It's around 3,500 people, 3,394 in attendance. And congrats to Beckford for arriving at 100 appearances for Hartford Athletic and also grabbing a goal to his name to celebrate. He opens the scoring in the 45th minute. We also had a missed penalty kick for Jamaican forward and Hartford forward Romario Williams. The penalty was saved by goalkeeper Daniel Gagliardi, and that was a right-footed shot saved in the center of the goal there. Hartford conceded an own goal off the back of Joe Farrell, in the third minute of stoppage time, but it proved to be too little, too late for Miami as they tried to generate a comeback. Williams did manage to score a goal, though. Even after missing his penalty kick, he scored in the 55th. Cabral will make it 2-1 in the 76th for Miami. And then it was Musa Galusa in the 90th minute plus stoppage time to get the goal for Hartford Athletic. And then Farrell with the own goal. Back-to-back losses for Miami, and it's 3 wins from 4 total games for Hartford. Detroit City FC taking on North Carolina FC. This one would end in a 1-0 victory for Detroit City FC. You want to talk about own goals? We had an own goal here being the only one at Keyworth Stadium. That came from Blanco in the 9th minute. 4-for-4 for Detroit City. First time getting a clean sheet this season. I watched a little bit of the game prior to lose City and in the 11, and I have to say, number 10, Ali Koot, for Detroit was a pleasure to watch in the little time that I got to see him. So I'll be excited to see what he can do more of, as especially when we feature Detroit in a spotlight. Only one shot on target for each team in this one. Memphis 901 FC 901 hosted Orange County Soccer Club, and they did not get their victory. It was the Travelers Orange County Soccer Club with a 2-0 win. Goals from Olaski and Among, both coming right past the hour mark. Back-to-back goals pretty much in the 61st minute for Olaski, 63rd minute for Among. And this one, another shutout for Colin Shuttler. And they're undefeated still and sitting on top of the West, Orange County Soccer Club. Memphis, meanwhile, their third loss in a row. And their second game without finding the back of the net. They travel to Loudoun next time around. So we have goals, we have own goals, we have red cards, but also we have some games with no goals. Pittsburgh Riverhounds ties Tampa Bay Rowdies in a 0-0 draw. Pretty much split the dividends in a possession. These two sides, 3 shots on target for Pittsburgh, 2 on target for Tampa Bay Rowdies. When you talk about touches in the opposition box, it was 28 for Pittsburgh Riverhounds, only 9 for Tampa Bay Rowdies. Shots inside the box, 12 out of the 15 total shots for Pittsburgh. So they just couldn't get it done. They couldn't find the back of the net. But it is the first point of the season for Pittsburgh, while the Rowdies remain undefeated, but only 1 win in 4. Another 0-0 draw was Rhode Island FC in their second ever home game in franchise history, taking on the Charleston Battery. That one ended at 0-0. So they remain undefeated at home, Rhode Island, despite being a man down for the final 20 minutes of play, still searching for that first win in franchise history. Third draw of the season for Charleston Battery. So they remain as well undefeated. It was 6 shots on target for Charleston Battery in this one, compared to 1 shot on target for Rhode Island FC. When you talk about big chances missed for both sides, big chances 2 for Charleston, 1 big chance for Rhode Island FC, 5 corners for Charleston, 1 for Rhode Island FC. And then we also have, what's crazy, more passes in the opposition half for Rhode Island FC, despite Charleston having more of the shots on target. So 130 passes in the opposition half compared to only 106 for Charleston Battery there. Aaron Malloy was the FUT Mob man of the match in that game with an 8.3 rating. He won 75% of his tackles. In addition, 2 clearances, 4 interceptions, 11 defensive actions in total, with 8 recoveries as well. So doing his due diligence in the middle of the park. Not surprising that he's the man of the match, especially in a 0-0 draw. Colorado Springs did not put up any on the board, but Sacramento were able to put up 2. Colorado hosting Sacramento here, and they lost 2-0. Goals from Amon and Cicerone. 4 straight losses for Colorado. This is from Hugh Johnson of the Gazette in Colorado. A week off did nothing to change the Switchbacks' course as visiting Sacramento Republic FC cruised to a 2-0 win in downtown Colorado. Saturday saw the Switchbacks return to a familiar refrain of stagnation in the attack, Colorado Springs just put two shots on target in the contest, both coming in the second half of the match. So the team hasn't scored a goal in its last two matches and has just one goal on the season. Colorado Springs with the league worst goal differential of -7. Meanwhile, for Sacramento, all things good over there. They're tied at top of the Western Conference, remaining undefeated, and Trevor Amon got his fourth goal of the season. Shifting attention to what was a very big game in New Mexico, New Mexico United taking on El Paso Locomotive in the Derby del Camino Real. New Mexico walks away with 3 points here, as well as three goals, winning 3-2 against El Paso. They made things interesting in the final moments, that being in Saturday's match against El Paso, four goals would be scored in the final 15 minutes, including two by the black and yellow to pull out a 3-2 win. United started off the match strong, you know, thanks to a missile off the foot of Marco Micheletto in the 7th minute. He was also, by the way, in case you didn't know, our first ever featured spotlight player of the game. If you haven't, you can check out our coverage of New Mexico in their season opener in one of the previous episodes. The game would then go on 74 minutes without another goal. As United was looking to hold on to a 1-0 lead to close out the match, El Paso tied things up in the 81st minute. Then in the 87th minute, former New Mexico player and current El Paso forward Armando Moreno gave Locomotive a 2-1 lead off of a penalty kick. As the game was nearing the end and United on the brink of losing, the black and yellow struck gold with the subs off the bench. The attacking play, fresh legs from New Mexico, resulted in a Jacopo Reyes header into the back of the net, 89th minute, and a Nicky Hernandez game-winning goal just 2 minutes later. That at the Lab Isotopes Park in front of a jam-packed crowd of 9,019 on attendance there. New Mexico United getting the win, getting the very important win against El Paso. El Paso, they had it. They had it, but what spectacular showmanship from the substitutes to make the difference for New Mexico. Oakland Roots takes on Monterey Bay FC at home. Couldn't get the 3 points. It's Monterey who sweeps off everything. You want to talk about late goals. This one we had in the 86th minute from Boone. So the Union is back to winning ways with a goal in the later stages of the second half. That's three losses in a row for Oakland Roots. Oakland Roots fall 1-0 at home to Monterey Bay FC. This is the third consecutive game, by the way, Roots have failed to score, and the 17th consecutive game without keeping a clean sheet, bringing their record to 1-3-3. Oh, just before I forget, by the way, the coverage of the New Mexico game, I got that from Bradley Benson on KRQA News. Just want to give shout-outs where shout-outs are due. Back to Oakland Roots and Monterey Bay FC. Yeah, I mean, really, the attention of this game was, unfortunately, after the final whistle, things went bad. Nearly the entire rosters of Oakland and Monterey Bay FC got into a scrum on the field. This accumulated in four red and two yellow cards issued by referee Gerald Flores. Shown reds for Oakland was Hackshaw and Babacuar Nye, along with Monterey Bay's Carlos Herrera and Walmor Martinez. As he was walking to the locker rooms at Pioneer Stadium, Martinez did not acknowledge the infraction. Former Root forward and unused substitute for Monterey Bay, Enriquez, was involved and shown a post-game yellow card along with Oakland's Memo Diaz. While it was difficult to see from the field level on the south side of the stadium, Martinez initially shoved a Roots player, leading to Hackshaw chasing him down. The video showed Nye running after Martinez before being held back. Then Hackshaw slipped when throwing a punch, resulting in Martinez attempting to kick Hackshaw in the face. It would be surprising if Hackshaw and Martinez at least didn't receive multiple game suspension. Roots head coach Noah Delgado declined to comment when asked about the situation. Post-game, what we know is the USL always tries to keep these outbreaks such as this from the public eye. The league's highlights from the match cut away at the end of the stoppage time, for instance. What happened post-game should not be glorified, but still remains important news. This means Oakland will be without its foremost captain in Hackshaw and will leave a force of a key player, Nie, to miss time. Now suffering three straight losses without a goal, finding productivity will become increasingly difficult without two critical playmakers. That was Jack B. Morris of OaklandRootsBlog.com. Las Vegas Lights gets a victory against San Antonio FC 1-0. San Antonio FC received their first loss of the season. It was Smart with the goal in the 56th minute at Cashman Field. Right-footed shot from outside the box to the bottom left corner. That was assisted by Jean-Claude Ngondo. Three wins on the bounce for Las Vegas, with Smart sealing the deal there. Congrats to Las Vegas FC. And finally, we have Birmingham Legion taking on Loudoun United FC. This one would end 3-1 for the hosts in their home opener of the season. 2,112 in attendance at Productive Stadium. I watched the first half of this one, by the way. I saw Zach Ryan hitting the left post with a right-footed shot from outside the box from a direct free kick. And I just was like, you know, from what I saw in the first half, albeit I was playing cards with a bunch of my friends, but we had the game on in the background. 175 passes for Birmingham Legion, right? 261 passes for Loudoun United FC. A lot of those passes in the opposition half, 104 compared to 58 from Birmingham Legion. And like I said, Loudoun United could play nice one-touch soccer, but they need something individual, right, to really break the deadlock. And it wasn't coming in the first half, but the 19-year-old Egyptian in the second half, Abukuda, would change that. And he just was able to take the space, dribble, and take a beautiful shot from the outside of the box. Might be goal contender for match day 5, but momentum is big in sports, and games can take a turn on the dime with momentum. It was a Learman own goal that shifted momentum in Birmingham's favor. Then in the 74th minute, Tyler Pascher had a nice left-footed shot from the center of the box to the top left corner. That was assisted by Dawson McCartney. And the 90th plus 6 minute, we had Mujib Murana, a left-footed shot from outside the box to the bottom left corner. That assisted by Enzo Martinez, and that would seal the deal for Birmingham. Surprised in their comeback. Kudos to them. So Birmingham win their second game of the season, and it's back-to-back losses for Loudoun United FC. Taking a look at the standings now. So as I mentioned, let's take a look at the Western Conference first. It's OCSC, Orange County, with 11 points. They're tied in the top of the table with Sacramento Republic FC. Both teams undefeated so far. Right behind them is New Mexico United on 10 points. Then you have Las Vegas Lights in spell of good form. Three games, three wins in a row for them. They have 9 points from 5 games. Right behind them is San Antonio FC with 8 points. Tied with them is Monterey Bay FC. That's the 5th and 6th place teams. And then we have a little bit of a drop off for the bottom half of the Western Conference. There are 3 teams tied on 4 points. Phoenix Rising, Oakland Roots, and FC Tulsa. However, FC Tulsa can take some positivity knowing that they have 3 games played so far this season, the least played out of any team in the Western Conference. Bottom half, big time bottom half of the bottom half of the Western Conference, we have Memphis 901 FC with 3 points, El Paso Locomotive with 1 point, and Colorado Springs Switchbacks with no points. The only team in the USL to not have any points so far. 4 losses from 4 for them. On the eastern side of things, it's Louisville City FC and Detroit City FC sharing the points at the top of the table, 12 points for each of them, 4 wins from 4. Right behind them, we have in third place Hartford Athletic with 9 points. Tied with them is Charleston Battery with 9 points. And then we have Birmingham Legion right behind them with Tampa Bay Rowdies as the same in terms of points. They both have 6 points, so that's 5th and 6th place, Tampa Bay and Birmingham Legion there. Bottom half of the Eastern Conference. North Carolina FC, 5 points from 5 games. Loudoun United right behind them with 4 points. As well with 4 points, we have Miami FC and Indy 11. That's the 8th, 9th, and 10th place teams in the Eastern Conference. And then we have Rhode Island FC with 3 points in 11th place. And then bottom of the Eastern Conference, Pittsburgh Riverhounds with only 1 point. Their first point of the season coming in their latest draw. But that's what the standings are looking like. Let's see what else I have in store. Yes, news from the USL Rondo, the official newsletter of the USL, brought to you by Nicholas Murray. Western New York native and experienced sports executive Peter Marlett Jr. has announced the formation of Buffalo Pro Soccer, a group that plans to bring a USL championship club to Buffalo by 2026. He's got a dream of landing a professional soccer team in Western New York, and it's a Buffalo-born sports executive that acquired the expansion rights for a team in the USL championship. Peter Marlett Jr. is a former overseas professional who stepped down as the general manager of a championship-winning pro team in Omaha to lead this effort. He envisions an aggressive timeline. He'd like the team to be competing just 2 years from now, opening play in spring 2026. His group, Buffalo Pro Soccer, also plans to bring a top-flight women's team to the area as well. Marlett's group is exploring possible stadium sites for Buffalo across the city and in some suburbs. He wouldn't confirm any specific locations in consideration, but said downtown Buffalo is probably the ideal location, end quote. He also said, in quote, anywhere that somebody has considered putting a stadium in the city of Buffalo, we've looked at it and had conversations about it. It's a big list, end quote, from Marlett. One site that is not currently in consideration is the Buffalo Bills Stadium, present or future. But how does FC Buffalo fit into this whole Buffalo's Pro Soccer USL bid? Well, Buffalo has already had a soccer team, FC Buffalo, which is a top-level amateur club that plays in the fourth tier of the U.S. soccer pyramid and has been building a fan base, by the way, for nearly 15 years. Marlett sees FC Buffalo as a strong local partner and believes that there's actually room for both clubs to coexist. So that's really from an interesting standpoint from Marlett. He'd love to be able to offer FC Buffalo players their first professional contract, he even said. And he's also an FC Buffalo alum who played 5 seasons for the club after a stint in the Australian second division. So that article coming from Nick Veronica and WIVB.com, Channel 4 in Buffalo. Good chance 2026 will have a Buffalo Pro Soccer team, another New York team returning to the USL Championship. We'll see what happens, but that's big news coming this week. As well, in terms of stadiums, we have Indy 11's new home at 11 Park. That is also set to be completed now by 2026, with the club's women's squad set to join the USL Super League upon its completion. By the way, currently Indy 11 play at the Michael A. Carroll Track and Soccer Stadium, which was built back in 1982. They're due for a nice upgrade. Last piece of news is this new roster rule in the USL Championship, as well as USL League One, that this season is providing, and it's allowing more opportunities for young players to be a part of the game day roster and see action in both the leagues. You're talking about the USL Championship. This is from Nicholas Murray. This new initiative allows clubs to include 2 players under the age of 18 in their game day roster, which is above the standard 18-man squad that has been used in previous seasons. And this is only, by the way, taking place for home teams. So they're allowed to add 2 young players to their home game roster, and these 2 players have to be part of the U18 teams or of that age. So that's quite interesting, and this is from Oliver Wiss, the USL head of Global Football Development and Sporting Director. He says, these 2 roster spots will allow for further development of youth players by providing the uncompromised opportunity to play them in a competitive match and ultimately increase their value. Good idea. I really like this. I really, really like this. In 2013, the league introduced the USL Academy signing program, which actually allowed players to join first-team squads and compete in league play and the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup while retaining their NCAA eligibility. So this model has now been adapted as standard by other professional domestic leagues in the United States, and some of those whose debuts in the USL Championship are like these people, current call-ups Brendan Aronson and Mark McKenzie. They came as USL Academy signings, and they've gone on to represent the United States at the senior international level. Players making those first steps this season already evidence of the first 2 weeks, we have North Carolina's FC's Adrian Pelayo and Julian Placias. We have Oakland Roots Soccer Club's Ilya Alexiev. We have Orange County's SC's Ben Bariolo and Sacramento Republic FC's Blake Willey. They've all made their USL Championship debuts, while we had Tampa Bay's roster in its season opener against San Antonio FC featuring USL Academy signings Nick Skubis and Christian Ortiz. So that's from Nicholas Murray, that sort of nice addition to your home game rosters, adding those two young players to feature into the spotlight. Last but not least, as we approach the hour mark of this episode, just to quickly, the match day 6 and 7 preview. That's right, we're getting a bit of a mixture of both, so next time I have an episode, we'll cover both. In any case, match day 6, according to Google, is only featuring two games. That'll be tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, for Pacific Charleston Battery hosting Louisville City FC. And then we'll also have Thursday, April 11th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, Miami FC hosting Tampa Bay Rowdies. But then we have Saturday are for the boys. Saturday for the USL Championship. Loudoun United hosts Memphis 901 FC. That'll be at Saturday, April 13th, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 Pacific. 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, April 13th, Indy 11 will take on Charleston Battery at home. Rhode Island will take on Pittsburgh Riverhounds at 7:30 p.m., 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. That's Saturday, April 13th. That's Rhode Island, Pittsburgh. What a clash at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Possible chance for either of those two teams to get their first win of the season. We also have San Antonio hosting Orange County Soccer Club next Saturday. That's at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. El Paso Locomotive FC take on Oakland Roots Soccer Club. Both teams out of form at the moment. That's going to be Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific. Also on Saturday, late at night in the 10 o'clock hour for Eastern, we have Monterey Bay FC hosting Las Vegas Lights. Sacramento Republic FC hosting FC Tulsa. And then we'll have Phoenix Rising FC at 10:30 hosting Colorado Springs Switchbacks. That's 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. And then Sunday, the only game taking place on Sunday at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. That's North Carolina hosting Birmingham Legion FC. Wow, I am exhausted. A lot of fun, tough, I can't even talk right now. Fun stuff to get into. It was a jam-packed week. So much to cover in light of the news, as well as CBS being the home for the USL Championship for the first time, with Louisville taking on Indiana. Lots to get into, as always, and I just love it. I love it. More to get into as the season progresses. In any case, I always welcome feedback on the show. Please let me know your thoughts on the show and the structure. What are you enjoying? What do you like to see more of? I want to know your listening habits. I had a listener reach out to me on Instagram. Christian, thanks for taking the time to write to me. He had said, gave me nice feedback, saying he likes the concise and effective analysis of the match week. He also says that a lot of other USL content comes out midweek, but I get it. He likes to have the recap coming as quick as possible, which is why Mondays are really great. So really appreciate you taking the time to write and for your nice feedback on the podcast. And then if you have more feedback for me, feel free to reach out to me on social media platforms, TalkUSL everywhere with the handle at TalkUSL. If you want to support the podcast, make sure to give a review on whatever platform you are using to listen. Make sure to tell your fellow friends, family, and most importantly, fellow USL fans to give it a listen. I really appreciate that. Any feedback you got for me, listening habits, I want to hear it. Send me an email as well, talkuslchampionship@gmail.com. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been All Talk, All USL, Talk USL, covering the latest scores, news, and developments in the USL Championship. Talk soon, everybody. Bye for now.